Good morning and welcome. Appreciate you coming out this morning to see this presentation. I'm David Patterson. I'm a professor of social work at the University of Tennessee and the director of the Knoxville Homeless Management Information System. Stacia was the data analyst for us on that project until she went off for higher learning. We have nothing to disclose. This was a joint or collaborative project between the Knoxville Homeless Management Information System. And homeless management information systems are funded by HUD across the country in communities and in states for the collection of information and services delivery to homeless individuals. And we've had the contract for Knox County, or we've had the grant for Knox County for the last 10 years. And the project we're going to describe here today was a collaborative effort between Knox HMIS, the City of Knoxville, and the Knox County Public Health Department. And so I want to acknowledge our collaborators, Mike Gunthorne from the City of Knoxville, Dr. Kathy Brown from the Public Health Department, Roberta Sturm, and Alicia Mastroianni. Close enough, perilously close. So the study's goal was to determine the impact of permanent supportive housing on the cost and frequency of services used by individuals experiencing chronic homelessness in Knox County. Most of you probably know permanent supportive housing is the treatment of choice or the option of choice now, or is increasingly becoming the option of choice to address homelessness, and it provides safe, reliable residence and a case manager to individuals who have been chronically homeless and have a disability. And you see there the definition of chronic homelessness. Studies have found that providing individuals with experiencing chronic homelessness reduces utilization of services and associated costs to the communities. It also creates reductions in incarcerations, hospitalizations, use of emergency shelters, and related social costs in multiple studies have been demonstrated. However, what the research to date has not looked at individual characteristics predicting pre- and post-permanent supportive housing or costs of pre- and post-permanent supportive housing. And so that's part of the intention of this study.
Yes. No, please. I just want to add to that many of these studies have been undertaken over the past decade, and we've seen kind of the proliferation of housing first and PSH models. But the majority of them have been done by nonprofit organizations that are kind of doing advocacy in their communities, and so you see sort of a lot of trend analysis.
I'm going to ask you to really use the mic.
Sorry.
I'm going to want to hear this again later.
Okay. I apologize. They've been doing a lot of trend analysis, but have not sort of like drilled down at a more granular level and used more refined, even something as non-refined as regression, but to look more closely. So that's kind of the motivation for this study.
And you see there are research questions. Does it impact community service, mental health, physical health care costs for individuals previously homeless? And then what are the individual characteristics predicting pre-housing cost and post-housing cost?
So for this study, as Dr. Patterson mentioned, we worked collaboratively on an initiative that was really led by the health department that brought all of us in. So what we ended up doing is asking folks from our area hospitals, our local health department, community health centers, both inpatient and outpatient, the police department, and the ambulance service to give us the costs for a group of consented individuals. We had 41 for the study that were housed for at least 1 year and then had also spent at least 1 year homeless in Knoxville. So we asked them, based on birth date and social security number, to pull those costs from their databases, what those services, not specifically what the services were, but the frequency of service and then the costs associated with it for both that 1 year window when they were homeless and the 1 year window after they had been housed. So for the sample, what we did is we pulled it from the HMIS, which is the Homeless Management Information System. We had a recruitment list initially of 137 individuals that we had identified. We ended up with 41, which seems quite miserable. However, we should say that one of the reasons I think that we weren't able to follow up with a number of folks is because permanent supportive housing can, in fact, be permanent for a lot of folks, but can also sort of be a stepping stone so that you might continue after the fact. And sometimes it's hard to find you after the fact if you don't have a relationship with your case manager. Nonetheless, we ended up with a consented sample of 41. You can kind of see the comparison there. I think the important point is that when thinking about the chronically homeless population, we have more of a concentration of male sex and more of a concentration of older age. So you see that in the sample that we were able to get consent from. So for the analysis, we did a paired samples t-test of overall costs to see how the folks changed when they were homeless and then whenever they became housed in terms of community costs and use of community resources. And then we also looked at multiple regression. So we regressed total cost on individual level characteristics and then subdomain costs. So when I say subdomain, that means specifically ambulance service or use of inpatient hospitalization or mental health outpatient. So there are, in fact, 11 subdomains. So that resulted in 22 individual regression analyses and then two for the total pre-costs and total post-costs.
So you see there in terms of community costs, the changes over time. You see as you would, somewhere I have an arrow. Oh, there we go. So you see, as you would expect, there was an increase in cost in case management because you have case managers that are more engaged with the population. You had a decrease in terms of emergency shelter costs because people are in housing. Supportive services decreased as well. Jail stays dramatically decreased once these individuals were housed. Emergency medical service increased slightly, and we'll get to why that is. But overall, in terms of community costs, you see dramatic reductions in cost and for these 41 individuals. Mental health services, strikingly, inpatient costs decreased. And outpatient costs increased slightly. And again, that's what you would expect. What you would hope is that you're engaging the formerly homeless with mental health services and you decrease inpatient hospitalizations and you have increases in outpatient services. Healthcare costs rose. And now look at the bottom line here. And I want to point that to you. And you see increases in inpatient costs, increases in outpatient costs, primary care costs, and emergency room costs. I want to point to the fact that there was about 10% of the population that in the pre-housing or pre-permanent supportive housing costs accounted for 78% of those costs. And post, you had, again, about 10% that accounted for 70% of that cost. So essentially what you have is, you know, three or four individuals who were physically ill, very ill as a matter of fact, and the costs rose.
I will say that even though we had some really extreme outliers in terms of looking at skewness and kurtosis, deciding whether or not we should log transform variables before we put them into the t-test, they weren't sort of outside the bounds of normality. So even though they were kind of exorbitant in comparison, they weren't statistically very, very different. So we looked at the pre and post total housing costs and just did a simple t-test on per capita. This is great news, right? Because it was an increase after housing, but not a statistically significant one. So in this case, we're happy to have non-significant findings. Moving on to the regression, in this table, I have presented unstandardized betas, and I did not report standard errors only to save space, and I only reported significant findings in order to save space, because as I mentioned, there are 22 different ones. so you don't want to see all that. We did do a power analysis beforehand because we had a sample of only 41, so you'll notice that those R squares are really, really high, and they have to be in order to detect any sort of significance in such a small sample. So what we found is actually really meaningful. For each one-year increase in age, we see an $806 increase across all domains of costs. $574 of that cost increase is accounted for in inpatient hospital stays. Men in the study had higher overall cost pre-housing. Here you can see it's actually $36,000 more in costs. And then also race was an important predictor of arrest costs pre-housing, which I think sort of speaks to both the criminalization of homelessness and then, you know, some other social issues that we're dealing with. Whites in the study were arrested less, and consequently, being a minority resulted in an increased jail cost of around $3,000. And then, though very small, the number of days homeless significantly impacted pre-housing costs for jail. So looking at post-housing regression analysis, we actually find that the overall cost is non-significant, which is actually a good thing here again. But you do see an individual that's 1 year older will have $370 less in mental health inpatient costs and $26 less in mental health outpatient costs as a result of housing. So taken together, what does all of this stuff mean? I think, as we mentioned earlier, there's been tons of studies put out about cost-benefit analysis of permanent supportive housing. And I think it should sort of, these findings should sort of temper people in terms of what to expect, right? So that not every population, specifically those that are chronically homeless, are going to see very drastic decreases in costs. And in fact, in some cases, you may see increases in costs as people are put into housing and have a relationship with a case manager. They may be more likely to access mental health services, to get primary care services, that sort of thing. And so I'll let Dr. Patterson continue sort of with those implications.
Well, just three quick points. First is that for agencies and case managers, first of all, there needs to be far more research done in this area and far more research looking at the granular predictors of cost, both pre and post housing. Second, what this suggests is that we need to develop ways of looking at the individuals who are at highest risk, both at the agencies, case managers, and communities, need to be able to identify those individuals that are at highest risk and target services towards them. And then finally, the final point I would make, and that's related to our collaboration, is to my knowledge, this is one of very few studies that have been done using HMIS data in permanent supportive housing evaluations. And what we would encourage is greater use of community health departments and community homeless management information systems collaborating to evaluate services delivery and outcomes in specific communities. 2 minutes. And there you see our collaborators again. Do you have any final words? Okay. All right. Thank you very much.